Afternoon. I apologise again to those of you who I've already seen this morning. I'm presenting this presentation on behalf of my colleague, Professor Deli Chen, who was unable to come to the meeting today. So this is sort of a broad overview of the work that we're doing in Australia. So just looking at, to give you a general idea of what we're doing over there, as some of you may not be aware. So this is work that we do with Deli Chen, myself, Robert Edis, Deborah Turner as well, who does a lot of our field trials. We have some collaborative people as well. Kevin Kelly is from the Department of Primary Industries in Victoria, and Weijing Wong is from Queensland Department of Natural Resources and Water in Queensland. And Charlie Walker is from Incitec Pivot. So I think we had a few talks about what the benefit of using enhanced efficiency fertilisers is, and it comes down to the need for producing sufficient food to feed a growing global population. In developing countries, this comes down to the need for food security for those countries, and in developed countries, it's more an issue of achieving higher yields to feed populations and to achieve profits. So the chart here is showing that as global cereal production has increased, so has the inputs of fertilisers, with nitrogen running along on the top here. But with that increased use of fertilisers, there's been a decrease in the use of the efficiency of the nitrogen fertilisers over a number of years, as shown by the tonnes of grains produced per metric tonne of fertiliser applied. So in Australia, we have these estimates of 6 to 59% of nitrogen use efficiency. So this is nitrogen transformations in soils, which I'm sure you're all aware of, but the studies we've been doing have concentrated on applications of urea to soil, so that's our starting point. So the reason we want to use these fertilisers is to reduce the impact that they have on the environment. So something like nitrate leaching can cause eutrophication of waterways. We've got the greenhouse gases coming out, the nitrous oxide. There's also the indirect greenhouse gas ammonia. And increasing cost of fertiliser could be an issue, but it depends on the cost of these products, because once you start adding these new things to make them enhanced, the price of that product goes up, so you have to reduce. The advantage would be when you can start dropping the application rates of nitrogen. So the three that we've studied are controlled or slow-release fertilisers, the urease inhibitors, and nitrification inhibitors. So controlled-release fertilisers have got a coating on them that just over time, related to temperature or moisture, the coating dissolves and the fertiliser is reduced. There's some products, a wide range of products, from sulphur-coated urea to these more sophisticated polyolefin-coated products, some of which are called Meister, that come out of Japan, and they produce fertilisers that have controlled release that follows a sigmoidal release pattern that's meant to mimic the growth of a crop, and they can design the fertiliser based on the growing time of the crop and when you'd need the most of the nitrogen. So this chart is showing some work that was done with this Meister 70 and 270. So the 70 is designed to reduce, release the nitrogen over a shorter time than the 270. And we found this is urea at the bottom here. We've got two different application rates and two different lengths of time after urea application. So we find with these products that, with this polyolefin coated product, that the rate of release of the nitrogen from the coated granule is markedly slower than from the straight urea, which is just this line down the bottom. And that with the higher rate, the 270 is holding the urea much more. This is a small study that we did looking at differences in ammonia losses from very small-scale incubation studies. We just looked after 2 days. What were the differences between these treatments? So we had urea. Zeolite urea was a urea granule coated with zeolite, with the zeolites designed to hold on to the nutrients. We had ESN, which is a polymer coated, the Meister, and also black urea, which is a humic acid coated urea. So that's also designed to hold on to the nutrients. So we found here that these two, the black urea actually seemed to create more ammonia emissions, but these two coated, the polymer and the polyolefin coated, reduced the ammonia emissions dramatically. The other things that we're looking at the urease inhibitors, and some of you have heard me talk about these, so the reason that we use the urease inhibitor is to keep the urea in the urea form so it's got time to move into the soil so that once it starts hydrolyzing, we don't get that ammonia volatilization occurring. These studies here are small-scale incubation studies that we did, working on just 40 grams of soil in controlled temperature conditions, and we've looked at a number of different cropping systems. So we had a wheat cropping soil, a sugarcane soil where we put a little trash blanket, and also a pasture soil. And what we found with these is that in the wheat cropping soil, which was a mineral soil, the inhibition or the slowing of the release of urea when the inhibitor was added, which is the dark coloured lines, was much greater than we observed in those other systems. And this is due to the differences in the level of organic material and the differences in the urease activity of those systems. But what we did find was this is 45 degrees Celsius. We ran that trial on the sugarcane trash because it can get very hot up in Queensland. Was that there was a slight bit of inhibition occurring there. So the inhibitor is working a little bit, but it's breaking down quite rapidly at that temperature. And in the pasture soil, this treatment here is 5 degrees. So we've got 5, 15 and 25. So even under those cool temperatures in those highly organic systems, we were finding that the influence of the inhibitor on the urea hydrolysis was limited. And this was applying the MBPT at 0.1% weight per weight with urea. So it may be possible that a higher rate could be achieve a greater level of inhibition. This was looking at some ammonia emissions in lab scale chamber studies where we had continuous flow systems on the wheat cropping soil, and we found that we eliminated this peak of ammonia emissions that occurred under both 15 and 25 degrees studies, and our levels of reduction were between 85 and 94%. The other work that we're doing is field-based studies of ammonia emissions, and there's a number of different different ways that this is being measured. So one way that we use is what we passive ammonia samples or space shuttles that are set up on a pole in the middle of a circular treatment plot. And then we've got this open path laser and FTIR systems as well, which are measuring real-time ammonia emissions. So this is this picture indicates the lasers, and they're set up across a treatment block, and over they provide a continuous measurement of the amount of ammonia that is coming off that system. So these lasers and FTIR are good in terms of being able to provide that continuous monitoring. Sometimes we use the passive ammonia samples because you can set up an experiment quite quickly and have it running for a short amount of time. These systems, the lasers and the FTIR, require a lot of expertise. You have to be trained up to use them, but once you can do that, then they work well. So this is Deborah Turner, who's our field, does a lot of our field work on ammonia. She's working with the lasers in China on a study on that they've been running over there. And these are some results from Deb's work in Western Victoria. So she was looking at wheat cropping soil again. And she, this chart is showing the daily and cumulative emissions of ammonia from that field trial. So the daily emissions of ammonia in these yellow lines, daily emissions of green urea in the green lines, and cumulative urea in the blue line, cumulative green urea in the green line. So what she found in these field trials, and I'm not sure if she used the passive ammonia or the lasers for this, I think it was the passive ammonia samples, that she found an 89% reduction in ammonia emissions related to using that green urea. So in the wheat cropping areas of Victoria, you can have a fair amount of dryness. So I haven't actually got the rainfall data for this site, so I don't know what was going on during that time. The other inhibitor is the nitrification inhibitor that inhibits the nitrification through inhibiting the ammonia oxidizing bacteria, and this is designed to reduce losses of nitrate from leaching or of nitrous oxide from denitrification or nitrification. This table just provides a summary of some of the studies that we've been doing. So I've just looked at the reductions in nitrous oxide emissions when we've added a nitrification inhibitor called DMPP. So we've had a few different trials from different sites. We've got a couple of Queensland sugarcane sites at the top where we tested them at 25 and 35 degrees. And in one of these, we found that we had very good inhibition of nitrous oxide emissions. It was more than 93% under all under both those temperatures. Whereas in the other soil, we found that the level of inhibition was much less, and it depended on temperature. So at 35 degrees, we had 19% inhibition of the nitrous oxide emissions and 64% at 35 degrees. We also tried a wheat cropping, a pasture soil over a temperature range, and we found in this system we got 37 to 65% reductions, which was related to temperature as well, so lower reductions at higher temperatures. In the Kalki, which is a wheat cropping soil from a similar area to the slide of Deb's work, we found we got 83 to 95% reductions in, this is in lab-based studies that we've been doing. So we found that we're getting emissions depends upon the soil type and can depend upon the temperature, which depends upon the soil type. So what we've identified, these are the most beneficial situations we've identified for use of enhanced efficiency fertilisers in Australia. The controlled release fertilisers are quite an expensive product, so they're targeted more to intensive production systems. The urease inhibitors have the greatest application where urea is surface applied, can be in a number of situations. They're, I guess, generally towards rain-fed systems because, as we know, once you get the water in there, the benefit of the inhibitor is reduced, but they also provide flexibility in irrigation schedules if they're in irrigation systems. And the nitrification inhibitors in wet soils where you get denitrification and leaching, coarse soils where you get leaching, and with the oncoming interest in mitigation of nitrous oxide, they could have a role in that area. Oh, that was the end. Sorry.
All right, okay. We've got a minute or two for questions.
Yes.
Do you know how the measurement of emissions with that open path laser compared to passive shuttle samples?
The question is, do I know how the level of emissions with the open path? How do the methods compare? I actually don't really know the answer to that because that's really Deb's area. I don't know. Yeah, because the passive system's just giving you like a daily measurement or however often you want to take the sampler. Yeah. I know that with the laser systems there's a lot of noise in the system, so interpreting the data is quite difficult, and I have never been involved in doing that. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Okay. I think we're out of time for this talk. Let's thank Helen.